This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Power Talk with Aldrin Sampier. Weekdays, 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
It is 9 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin Sampier. For the next 51 minutes, we'll be focusing on the mystery behind the 4 billion rand overpayment made by Eskom to 4 contractors. What was this payment for? And why was the 4 billion rand overpayment? And you'd remember that in December, there were Eskom officials who were arrested as part of an SIU investigation that was taking place. And those officials appeared in court. I think the matter was then postponed to May. And this is all in relation to corruption around the Kusile Power Station plant and how some officials have benefited from these contracts, including alleged kickbacks that they've received. And we also joined by Peter Louis Myburgh, who's done some investigation around this as well. And the question around monies that were paid to certain individuals working for Eskom, and how, for instance, with one particular company, Stefanuti Stocks, there was money paid to a certain individual under the pretense that it's money made available to rebuild classes at a certain school or build classes at a certain school, when only 400,000 of that money went to actually building the classes, while the company paid out 2 million. That project, the company said, cost 2 million. Yet only 400,000 was used to pay and make sure that those classrooms are built. So what happened to the 1.6 million? So that's what we're going to try and do over the next 51 minutes, trying to make sense of it all. We're taking your calls as well on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Sampier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. Remember that earlier on this week, the Public Enterprises Minister, Pravin Gordhan, had written to the ANC chief whip, Penny Majodini, naming the contractors responsible for this 4 billion rand overspend on the construction of Eskom's Kusile power plant and several former employees. Gordhan has also revealed that they are being probed by the NPA. So your calls on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Sampier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. Peter, good morning and welcome.
Hi, Aldrin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for making time. Fas Sekonati, good morning as well and welcome.
Morning, Aldrin. Good morning, power listeners. Peter Louis, good morning, sir.
Former colleague, how are you doing?
It's not a reunion, guys. It's not a reunion at all. And probably you guys may have worked on some of these stories together during Sukonati's previous time as a journalist. But Peter Louis, let's start off with you. How did we get to this particular point?
Yeah, Aldrin, yeah, so Sikunati and I will catch up later. But I think we have to keep on reminding ourselves at what lies at the core of these kind of overpayment issues. Let's just go back to the basic fundamentals of the amounts involved here. In 2007 and 2008, Eskom embarked on these massive construction projects for Kusile and Modipe. Together, they were supposed to have cost at that time around 150 billion rand. And the latest estimates, this is from the Department of Public Enterprises, last year indicated these costs together had ballooned to well over 300 billion rand. Mm-hmm. So they had doubled, according to the Department of Public Enterprises. There are some independent experts, Chris Yelland and the likes, who've actually said that it's more likely to be in the region of 440 billion rand. So what should have been around 150 billion rand expenditure has either doubled to 300 billion or could be as high as 440 billion rand. Mm-hmm. Massively over budget. So that really is at the core of what the heart of the individual companies' claims, and it relates to the overpayment issues. So mm-hmm. companies like Stefanuti Stocks, Tibula Construction, Tenova, Essor, all these myriad entities or companies that were appointed to do various bits of work on Kusile and Medupi, it's now becoming increasingly clear that there were some very questionable developments in their negotiations with the claims management team at Eskom when it came to submitting their claims, their invoices. So they would say that, you know, after a particular period or after a particular chunk of work had been completed, they would say that, no, instead of this having cost, you know, 400 billion or 400 million or 500 million, maybe something like the, you know, the construction of the roads or some of the outer buildings near Kusile, they would say that it actually ballooned to maybe a billion rand. And Eskom, at that point, seemed to be quite happy to settle some of these claims, which then also kind of relates to the...
And this would have been which, during which year?
Well, this would have been for the entire period between, you know, 2007, 2008, all the way into 2016. We know that from some of the documents I analyzed for the November 2019 piece, that some of the payments that went to tubular construction, for instance, and ESO, that happened as late as 2016. So it really is just a kind of a longstanding saga of overpayments to individual companies, and it does relate to, by the looks of it, to these kind of questionable dealings that Eskom officials then had in the background with the heads of some of these private companies.
And what would the description on the invoices be for the work that has been done? And isn't there someone who's supposed to also then sign off and say, indeed, this has been the work that has been done and this would be the value of the work so that the payment is made out?
Yeah, no, certainly. Because I think Sikonati would probably be best equipped to get into the actual technical details of each and every invoice. But, you know, kind of broadly speaking, a company like Stefanuti Stocks, they got the contract for the civil works around Kusile Power Station, the roads, various structures near the main power plant. Tenova, I think, got the coal and limestone stockyard tender. They also did the material handling system. ESO Construction at the underground terraces, and then Tubular got the air-cooled condenser contract. So just kind of varying sort of bits and pieces that all contribute to the construction of this, you know, massive mega-build project. And one would assume that the invoices would be submitted upon completion of each phase of the work they were supposed to conduct.
Okay. Sikonati, can you assist us with that? What would the ordinarily, what would the process be once an invoice is submitted?
Aldrin, thank you. I will tell you, I must admit right up front that I will be very keen on the actual detail per invoice. But the process would be, once a project has been, work has been completed on the project, Eskom will have to sign off and go check and verify if the work has been done, and there will be a handover certificate where the unit that will operate that particular machine then confirms indeed that this job has been done to meet all the requirements. Only then would a payment be made. And again, not just any single individual will make the payment. Adrian, the one thing I wish to first write up front for us to correct here, when the term overpayment is being perhaps misunderstood by a lot of people, or even being abused by a lot of people. What we mean by overpayment is that these are inflated contracts, illegally inflated to enrich some people. But it would seem in the public domain, and indeed in Parliament, there are people who take that to mean Eskom made a mistake and just made a payment and added 4 billion rand. No one could ever make that kind of mistake. These were contracts that were entered into by Eskom, and that, in the view of this management team, are inflated. Eskom was bound to pay too much. They are illegal, therefore, in the view of the team. It's not that someone made a mistake and just transferred money. I see a senior ANC official used the term 4 billion rand disappeared. No, it is not. certain ESCOM officials entered into contracts that we believe were deliberately and criminally inflated, paying far too much for infrastructure.
Sure. That's why for me it's so important to discuss the issue around the invoices and how the invoices are supposed to work. So you also indicated that ESCOM would then go and inspect and see whether the work that is said to have been done is actually done and whether it is to the satisfaction of the power utility, and then the certificate is handed over. When it comes to the costing of it though, where would things then change? Because I'd imagine that the costing of whatever project would have been done prior to even the project starting.
Absolutely. If you don't mind me chipping in there, Aldrin, I think,
okay.
From my piece in 2019, it became quite clear that there were two parties who were negotiating with these private contractors in terms of setting invoices. There was a formal Kusile execution team, for instance, the KET. That consisted of various ESCOM employees, and the panel was put together to sort of use their engineering expertise to, on the one hand, ensure that the work was done in the correct manner and in line with the original scope, but also that the invoices didn't become inflated so as to protect ESCOM's bottom line. So you had the KET task with actually negotiating these settlements. But
so you call it the K what?
The Kusile execution team were tasked with settling the invoices with a contractor like Stephanie Stocks or Tenova, whatever the case might be. But what became increasingly apparent then is that the likes of the top ESCOM management at Kusile, for instance, somebody like Franz Lacoudi, he would then step in and behind the backs of the KET have these kind of secretive or dubious meetings with the top bosses of some of these contractors. So just a little example of what it transpired at that time. Tenova, for instance, was battling with ESCOM, saying that, no, you owe us X amount and it's, over the original budget, but they claim to have been able to back it up by, increase in certain costs and so on. So just broadly speaking, an argument over what should be paid by ESCOM. And this should have been managed by the KET, to see the execution team. But then Franz Lacoudi goes and meets with the Nova's top management. That would have been CEO Walter Kung and the managing director, Ricardo Tinini, commercial manager, Neville Morum. Now, they're really at the top layer of management of the Nova, this ESCOM contractor. And, they had meetings at places like Mug and Bean in Midrand, where quite clearly the intention was to subvert the work of the Kusile execution team and land on a alternative sort of settlement behind the backs of the KET.
Isikonati?
Aldrin, thank you. So the thing to note here, the criminality that Peter Louis Maybeck is describing is between individuals that have now been charged. Of course, their guilt will be determined, guilt or otherwise, will be determined by a court of law.
Yeah.
After ESCOM became aware of evidence of corruption and laid charges with the police. And
when was this?
It was during 2018, Aldrin, when the charges were laid. Not only on this particular contract, but there are many more. ESCOM has laid dozens of corruption cases with the police, but we have only seen arrests in this particular matter, and it is now going through the court's processes. So the court will then decide, based on the evidence, who is guilty or not. The reality about ESCOM's policies and processes is that, for example, I cannot on my own meet a supplier for any reason. I have to have a colleague. That's the process at ESCOM. I have to have a colleague with me, and that meeting has to be minuted, and we have to report back to the structures. And my senior manager or the person I report to at that point has to approve the meeting before it happens. So we have had evidence, therefore, that not everything was above board. These are the same people then that found a way to negotiate a contract and pay far too much in that contract. That is how we landed in this state. Mm-hmm. And Eskom is pursuing many other cases.
What is Eskom's case around how, for instance, France would have been able to bypass all of those checks and balances?
Alton, I cannot discuss here direct and personal affairs of the employees of Eskom, but the policy is that there will be teams that first develop the scope of work that has to be done, and then they will send out a tender. And those that respond to the tender then will be shortlisted by a mm-hmm. committee. And Mr. Tlakuti, in this instance, would have been part of this committee. And it will go all the way the approval ladder until a price has been arrived at and the appropriate structures or committees of Eskom would approve this. The criminality goes into the detail when then there is a delay for one or another reason. Let's take the most famous example. The whole power stations, both Medupi and Kusile, Medupi was started in August 2007 and was meant to be completed within 5 years by 2012. And Kusile would have been completed in 2014. But as you now know, 12 years later, the stations have not been complete and the costs have doubled from the initial budget. All of those contracts, or many of those contracts, are suspicious. You have seen elsewhere in the public sector that when there are delays accompanied by cost escalations, there is a lot of corruption that has gone in there. That's how we find ourselves in this situation as Eskom.
Okay. Yeah. So 0619.
I just want to quickly add to that, if you don't mind, Eldrin. I think we have to keep in mind that if the question is how did somebody like Tlakuti get away with this, is that this kind of dealing went all the way to the very top echelons of Eskom's management. We have to keep in mind that Abraham Asongo was the executive for capital projects. He was also arrested alongside Franz Tlakuti in that tubular matter. So it certainly isn't something that kind of stopped at mid-level or Kusile level management, but certainly appears to have gone right to the very top of Eskom.
Okay, so 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Sampier, hashtag PowerTalk Sekonati quickly.
Aldrin, one more, just to add to what Peter Louis Mabek has said. The corruption at Eskom, I have for 15 years been writing in my previous life as a journalist, pointing out the corruption at Eskom went all the way to the top, not just at senior management level, but at the board, and even came from the government a lot of the time. That is just our reality. So when you have the whole system that has been corrupted, everyone would get their own piece. It was a free-for-all for a very long time. And that is how Eskom got to the point where it is now. Those are just the pure facts. And no one, I know quite a lot of your listeners will be surprised if this man speaks to Eskom. The facts are, Eskom comes from a position where it was totally compromised by the very people who were hired to look after its best interests, starting all the way from the top at the government level, all the way to inside Eskom.
Okay, just a quick one then, Sekonati. Based on what you just said now, the free-for-all and how the corruption started all the way from the top, including the board members, are you able to say whether there are any board members who are being investigated currently?
Yes, indeed.
Or former board members,
yes, indeed. There are former board members. There are former employees. Like I said earlier, Eskom has, particularly since 2018, February, laid dozens of charges with the police. These include even government ministers that have been suspected of wrongdoing. There are people being investigated, and sooner than you think, Eskom will actually be launching a civil suit because there has been on the criminal front, there have been no prosecutions. Eskom will be launching a civil suit to claim back money from some of these people, including a former Eskom executives and including perhaps former government ministers.
Can you give us a name?
Like I said, at the right time, when the documents have been lodged with the courts, you will get the names. I make sure you are the first to get them.
Former ministers, you say?
I say former ministers, former executives, politicians, and indeed former Eskom employees who may have played roles in all the corruption that we are discussing today.
Okay, and when do we expect these papers to be served?
In due course, shortly there will be some action on that front.
Okay. 0619870000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 97. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls. It's 10:30, time for Power News Headlines.
You're listening to Power Talk with Aldrin St. Pierre.
And we're taking your calls on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. Sikonati, before we move over to the calls, why did Eskom not want to reveal the names of these companies before?
Thank you, Aldrin, for a nice question. Can I beg your indulgence first before I just answer that question?
Okay.
And inform the people of South Africa that this generation system is quite constrained, and there is a high risk that today, or starting today, we may have load shedding between 5 and 9 p.m. I just wish for people to know that there will be.
Do you know which stage we'll be going to?
It might. It's not certain that we will, but the system is constrained. We might have to go to stage one if it does happen. We do beg the people to help us reduce electricity usage to avoid load shedding. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Why did Eskom not reveal the names before?
Mm-hmm.
It's simple, Alden. These are binding contracts that Eskom signed, which now, as I said earlier, in the opinion of the management team, were corrupt and illegal. But they are binding contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And as a state-owned company, the law is that you cannot just walk out of away from a contract. You first have to get a court order to set it aside as illegal, null and void. But before you don't want a prolonged court process if you can simply negotiate with your supplier and say, excuse me, please reduce this price. We believe you overcharged us. Can you reduce this price? And you want to give those negotiations a chance before going. You don't want to negotiate through the media or through the public. So Eskom had to initiate negotiations with these suppliers and say, this binding contract, we do believe that you overcharged us. And now Eskom accounts to Parliament through the Department of Public Enterprises. And everything that Eskom, that Parliament asks for, it has to be answered on the record. That is the only place where information, even before negotiations are concluded, if the members of Parliament indeed insist on an answer, they will get. But in the public domain, it's not necessary until you have reached the agreement or otherwise. In the event that you will have failed to reach agreement, you, of course, then are going to name the parties in a summons, in a letter of demand, when all hope of amicable solution have been exhausted.
Okay, so what has changed then since the last time, since Eskom refused to name those people? What has changed over this period?
What has changed is that the members of Parliament asked on the record, give us the names of these suppliers, whether or not negotiations have been completed. And Eskom, as an institution of the law, then responded in that way.
Have negotiations completed?
No, sir, they have not been completed, but the information was required for oversight in Parliament, and we have therefore named them. Some of the suppliers are indeed amenable to a settlement which may reduce the prices they charge to Eskom, and talks are ongoing there. Some are not interested in
talks. Is there any admission, though?
The nature of these things, Aldrin, is that if anyone admits to have committed a crime, you will never find such a study that says, yes, we committed a crime. But you will find an argument, for example, the one similar to McKinsey a few years ago, which said, you will get your money back. We are not admitting that we conducted ourselves criminally.
Yeah.
But we agree to return the fee.
Okay. I'm asking this question on the basis, and Peter Louis, I'll come to you now. Now we'll also be joined by Kaya Makakla, who's the Parliament Chairperson for the Public Enterprises Subcommittee. I'm asking you this question, Sikonati, based on a response that we got from ABB. I'm going to read it quickly. It says that my colleagues in South Africa have let me know that you are looking to comment. You're looking for a comment from ABB on Eskom's early announcement. Below is what we can say on this topic. It says the following: based on findings during an internal investigation, the company self-reported to the SEC and the DOG, to various authorities in South Africa and other countries, potential suspect payments and other compliance concerns in connection with some of the company dealings with Eskom and related persons. Many of those parties have expressed an interest in commenced investigation into these matters, and to the company is cooperating fully with them. In its second quarter 2019 financial information, ABB made it public that the company believes that there may be unfavorable outcomes in one or more of these matters. Does that sound like an admission to you?
I will not be interpreting ABB's message or statement to you. What I can confirm is that Eskom is claiming 1 billion rand from ABB, saying the contract that we signed with you, we believe, was overpriced by 1 billion rand. I can also confirm, Aldrin, that ABB has offered at this point to pay 240 million rand back to Eskom. And the talks are still ongoing there. When the negotiations arrive at a point where Eskom feels perhaps it can take or ABB can increase that offer, there possibly will be a settlement. If not, there will be a court process.
Okay. So the money that you're claiming from these companies, would that include interest as well?
Naturally, yes, of course. If they are paying back the money, then let's put it this way. All negotiations will bring a particular outcome. So if there is a compromise, it might very well be that, let's use the example of ABB again. Eskom is claiming 1 billion rand. ABB so far has put up 240 million. Let's just say Eskom gets the whole 1 billion rand. It could very well be that the talks may result in interest being paid or not.
Okay. And what's Stefanuti saying?
Stefanuti, I read in the media yesterday that Stefanuti actually claims that Eskom is the one that owes
it
money. It therefore would sound like they are prepared to go all the way and litigate on the matter.
Okay, so there is no money that has come from them as yet?
No offer from them. As I say, they have already told the market, and they are a listed company, they have already told the market that it is in fact Eskom that owes them money. So it would seem, therefore, that there will not be any negotiations there, or the negotiations are far from being concluded.
Is that not one of the reasons, Wena Sikonati, that Eskom didn't want to reveal the name of the companies, because one of those companies being a listed company, it may affect its stock price?
It is not Eskom's duty to protect anybody's share price. Eskom's duty is to protect its own best interests. You do not want to negotiate through the media. You do not want to negotiate in public. You go give the negotiations a chance, by trying to find an amicable solution, upon which then when there is an agreement, you go out to the public and make the announcement. If there is no agreement, then you go the court process, where everything is now, of course, in the public domain, and it's an adversarial process.
Okay, let's get Babukai Makatla. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk. From the portfolio committee side, on the information that has been provided by the DPE and what Sikonathi is sharing with us now, I just want to hear some reaction to that.
Well, good morning, good to you, sir, and your listeners. As the standing committee, I just want to correct the fact. The question that was asked was asked by the standing committee on appropriation.
Yes.
Not necessarily by the public enterprise portfolio committee. But, of course, it helped us to understand the processes and the state of these investigations. Because our understanding is that all these matters are the matters that relate to the state capture, which is still being in the process in the commission, which is Zondo Commission, and also there are, of course, involvement of the investing agencies in the process. Therefore, we are happy that we got this information as to know to what extent these 4 billion and the also 5 billion also that is also in that process of being investigated. I think the amount is in a tune of 9 billion that still has to be investigated and finalized from the whole question of the state capture.
Okay, so Sikonathi earlier on spoke about how, for instance, the corruption went all the way up to the board, including, he says, ministers as well. From the portfolio committee's side, do you know of any minister who's being investigated?
Well, not yet. But, of course, we are mindful of the fact that these corrupt activities took place when certain ministers were in power. The only situation that we are clear about is that it's not the ministers from the sixth parliament, which is at our own jurisdiction or at our own office. It was before the 2019 national elections. Therefore, all these matters involve the ministers beyond that.
Beyond that. So Peter Louis Myburgh was saying earlier on, looking at a scope between 2007 and 2006, where all these payments were being made.
Yeah.
So should we be looking at ministers during that particular period?
Of course. If there is any minister involved, it will be the ministers around that time.
Okay. Peter Louis Myburgh, just a quick one from you before we go to the power line. So with the money that France got from the company, what is it that he promised Sifanuti?
So one would assume that these kind of back channel talks revolved around settling companies like Essar and Sifanuti and TBL and De Nova's claims from Eskom. So, you know, on the one hand, as I mentioned earlier on, you had something like a Kusile management team that applied their expertise to ensure that Eskom didn't get shortchanged or overcharged. Mm-hmm. But then there were these back-channel dealings between the likes of Shakuri and the top management of these companies. Mm. And we can only assume that, you know, that revolved around settling the what now appears to be the inflated invoices, because the timeline and developments in the timeline around that time certainly fits with that hypothesis. It was around the time that Eskom made what now appears to be overinflated payments that the likes of Shlakudi received massive alleged kickbacks from these companies. So, you know, there certainly was a motivation and a very, very much a financial motivation for conducting themselves
from
in this
way. From the explanation that you got from Stefanuti when you asked them about the 2 million rand quote unquote donation, what did they say? Because I think from your investigation, you found that only about 400,000 was used towards the school.
That certainly is what the documentation indicates. So, you know, companies like Stefanity Stocks and some of the others who've made contributions to this apparent slush fund, they've mostly kept the line of saying that, you know, this was for their corporate social investment initiative, you know, various CSI projects, including the payments of schools or funding school development projects up in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. But it does appear that their answers in this regard is a little bit disingenuous, because they are essentially turning a blind eye to what happened with the money as soon as they made the payments, and they don't seem to want to take ownership. So they're quite happy to say that, you know, we paid 1 million or 2 million rand into a school donation fund that supposedly, you know, that we can verify went towards building the schools, you know, but when asked by a company like Stefanity Stocks, you know, to supply me with evidence that they had verified that a school was actually built, or the whole 2 million rand was actually appropriated for, you know, these school improvements, that's where they become a little bit coy in terms of supplying the necessary information.
Okay. But Mark, is there any intention from the portfolio committee to have some of these companies appear before Parliament?
Well, there will be time for that. But we don't want also to interfere as a Parliament with the process of investigation, because we might disturb the process. We would like to observe the process. Of course, as time to time, we'll be demanding from the shareholder, which is the minister, to account and answer some questions relating to this. Because also, we did that in relation to this 4 and 5 million.
Okay. 0619870000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM97. Please be short, sharp, and straight to the point. Peggy, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. Let me be straight. I think it would have been lovely to get Ukoko also part of that, to be part of that discussion, because Usiko Nathi, there's something he says. He says that the board that's been investigated at the old board. But we know that the current COO of Eskom has links to one of the companies that have been overpaid. But why are they not investigating the current board? Because Peter Louis Mayberg and Umofiko Nathi...
Which company is that, Peggy?
They know. Atku Lohana, he knows very well that the CEO has a link to one of those companies. I won't mention it because he knows. And he was saying it. You understand? And the problem is that there's a tendency to portray white execs as holy, as the people who are exposing corruption, when they are the ones who are involved in corruption. Right now, he's saying the old board, and we know that he's referring to Ibrahim and Ukoko. And he knows, Usiko Nathi, that that's a lie. Why are they not investigating the current board of Eskom, which is white, which is the one that is overpaying this company?
Okay. Usiko Nathi?
Thank you, Aldrin. When allegations against Jan Oberholzer were raised last year, Eskom appointed an independent attorney to investigate those and interviewed the people or the person who had made the allegations, and had scope to interview anybody else that the advocate felt could help. The response came back that there was nothing untoward in the conduct of Jan Oberholzer.
But wasn't he conflicted, though?
I'll get to that. When again allegations were revived early this year, Eskom appointed a different attorney in the name of Nazir Kassim to investigate again if there is any conduct on the part of Jan Oberholzer that is untoward. And again, advocate Nazir Kassim was given blanket powers to interview anybody, to consider any documents that he feel might help him. The outcome again came out that Jan Oberholzer has not done anything that is untoward. This is this year in May when the outcome came. Now, what are the facts? Jan Oberholzer worked for 28 years for Eskom until the 31st of December 2008, when he left. He went away and worked for many other companies, including he was hired by Stefanuti Stocks at some point. And when the board of Eskom in 2018, that was headed by Jabu Mabuza, came and had hunted him, wanting to bring him back to Eskom. The CV that they considered listed amongst his previous employers during the 10 years that he had left Eskom, listed Stefano Tistocks amongst them. The board considered that CV and interviewed Jan Oberholzer and hired him, with Stefano Tistocks having been declared as his previous employer there. Mm-hmm. At Eskom, every year, you have to declare interest, everybody that works for Eskom, from the lowest ranking employee to the most senior. You have to declare what interest, financial interest, business interest you have. Jan Oberholzer did this, and in his case, his interest gets approved, his declaration gets considered by the board and approved or rejected or recommendations made. This he did. And in that declaration, he declared that while he worked for Stefano Tistocks, he was awarded shares as an incentive. At the time he made the declaration in July 2018, he stated the value of the shares to be 140,000 rands that he had been given by his employer at the time, Stefano Tistocks. Mm-hmm. This year, he declared again in January that he has shares, 30,000 shares in Stefano Tistocks. At this point, the shares were worth 6,000 rands. Now, Jan Oberholzer last year got paid a salary of 4.4 million rand at Eskom. The value of his shares dropped because of the stock market price to 6,000 rands. At the time he was said to have a conflict. And the board of Eskom was shown all of this and signed it off. Personally, I'm just now showing you how the system works. Before I personally joined Eskom, I have shares invested in companies. When I joined Eskom, I declare this is my interest. And my employer looks at this, and there are questions as to how can this possibly conflict with your job. When you have answered that question satisfactorily and when the management has considered these facts and done their own investigation, they either approve and say, okay, no, we don't see any interest conflict here, or they instruct you to sell the shares, get out of the company. Jan Oberholzer's shares at Stefanukti, which he has now sold, were worth 6,000 rand at the time he was said by the accuser to be conflicted.
Okay, here's a question here. Can you please ask Sikonati, when will they investigate TAP, Trans Africa Project? It's a permanent sucking straw company that is doing all Eskom power lines wrong.
As a person that is not operational, I would need to go and find out the facts on that question. So I do not have an answer for you at this stage.
Okay. And Black Panther Power says, please ask your guest, one, why is Eskom negotiating its rightful claim? This is now with the companies that were overpaid. And can he name the project managers of Kusile and Midubi projects, and what penalties have been instituted since they failed to deliver a functional product?
Aldrin, I answered this question about why you negotiate right at the beginning. I will repeat the answer. When you sign a binding contract, if I come to you and buy a loaf of bread for 150 rand, when Peter Louis maybe can buy the same loaf for 10 rand, there's something wrong in that contract. And we have signed a binding contract. You then go back to the supplier and say, excuse me, I think there's something wrong with this contract. Can we renegotiate it? Please lower that amount to a more realistic price. When the supplier then refuses to engage or to lower the price, then we go to court. In terms of the law, Eskom or any state-owned company cannot just walk away from a contract. It has to get a court order to set it aside as null and void. But there comes a trial before that process. Anybody who has done any litigation knows that you want to avoid at all costs the possibility of spending a lot of money on lawyers. and save that money. And so you give negotiations a chance. When that does not help, you then go to court.
Okay. Can you name the project managers? I don't know what significance this would have, but yeah.
Again, I would not, even if I knew who those individuals were, I would not be naming them on right here. There are processes inside Eskom when someone has done something that they should not have done. They get taken through the disciplinary process, and the outcome, therefore, then decides whether they continue working for Eskom or not. I do not know who those project managers are. If I did, in the event that there has been no settlement on them, I would still not be able to name them.
Okay. Itumeleng, quickly, unfortunately, we've run out of time. You've got a minute. Good morning.
Yeah, Aldrin, I want to believe that all this corruption that we've done, because money was into leaving Eskom, it means senior managers were away. Because once you put up a contract, I've worked in public sector, you put up a contract, after putting up a contract, that contract have all systems in place. Once you have to move out of that, you must write a deviation report. Deviation report must be signed by the CEO. And if the CEO have agreed with that and signing that deviation report that says from 2 million, now it must go to 8 billion. All these processes, it makes a CEO an assist. Why is Eskom not opening a case against the CEO?
Okay. Obakeng, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. It doesn't matter how much were the shares. That guy who's busy protecting this white guy of a CEO, the guy had shares in a company that benefits from Eskom. If a mayor of a municipality has shares in a certain company and that company gets a big tender of billions, that mayor must account because they know each other, they have a relationship. They should stop protecting white people. When I'm
okay. And finally, quickly, good morning.
Hi, Adrian. Two quick things, right? Let me stick to the one. Sikhona is dribbling you when he's saying they did not disclose the information to Parliament on the basis of the confidentiality clauses of the agreement. Mm-hmm. It's simply a lie, because the confidentiality clauses of the agreement deal with the confidentiality between the two contracting parties. In this case, this is Eskom and whoever the contractor is. So their refusal is similar to a company refusing to disclose information to its board of directors.
Okay. Thank you so much, Fanele. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Sikonati, just quickly responding to Fanele's comment, as well as that call that we just got, arguing that irrespective of how many shares Oberholzer has, it's still a conflict of interest.
On that one, Adrian, in the wisdom of the board, which considered this disclosure, it saw no conflict. That's the wisdom of the board of directors. It saw no conflict. It's not that Jan did not disclose that information. He gave the board the opportunity to approve or disapprove. The gentleman who spoke earlier spoke about a deviation and having to be fined. He's absolutely correct. I have said to you that Eskom is pursuing quite a lot of senior or former senior executives for things that should not have been done. So the contracts were signed.
Including CEOs.
Eskom is pursuing a lot of the people that worked there and had a hand in these illegal activities.
Including CEOs.
Including everybody that had a hand that worked for Eskom, and even people that were in Parliament and in government.
Including CEOs?
Including all senior managers. Those include executives.
And CEOs, which include the
CEOs
executives.
CEOs are executives.
Okay, so you're investigating the CEOs as well?
Everybody that has played a hand in this.
Okay, then. Thank you so much. Sikonathi Mantshantsha, Eskom spokesperson, Peter Louis Maybeck, investigative journalist at the Daily Maverick, and Khaya Makakla, Parliament chairperson on the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises. Apologies, we are a bit late for news. It's 2 minutes after 11.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.